Pete Hagen, a biologist who arrived at Auk Bay as the program manager for Exxon Studies, a title that referred to NOAA's research into the Valdez's impact, found that his views about the scientists working for ExxonMobil hardened as time went on and as FOIA requests accumulated on his desk. "They may want to wear down government scientists," he reflected. "Beyond harassment, we don't know what Exxon's motivation is." His thinking about the oil corporation and its allies in the scientific community has become more extreme, he admitted. He felt that their willingness to bend data to serve the corporation's legal and business aims was not too dissimilar to what the tobacco industry went through, or the lead industry. Sometimes you win by persistence. For his part, Jeep Rice regarded ExxonMobil's tactics as legal, but just immoral. Jeffrey Short resented ExxonMobil's drive to access data before we'd even published it, which puts us in the position of giving data before we interpret it, giving them, in theory, the chance to write up papers before we did. For David Page, too, the arguments about science in Prince William Sound grew personal. He found the NOAA scientists' responses to his criticisms of their research to be shrill. "I wasn't accusing them of fraud. I was just saying my observations were at variance with what they were claiming." In fact, his published essay did come close to implying that Short's team had faked its hole digging. But after the initial accusatory exchanges, Page did not return to that charge. He supported Exxon's Freedom of Information Act demands because Jeffrey Short rarely presents data, and the only way you can get detailed information underlying his studies is to make a formal legal request. FOIA is not harassment. FOIA is to find out important information that government agencies aren't willing to let become public, Page believed. As to Short's concern that ExxonMobil was seeking raw data in order to advance arguments in public before the government scientists could, he said, "The record shows that our requests were made well after published reports were made in various venues, often several years or more after the studies were done." Science is innately uncertain. Its progress has been marked again and again by the defiance of settled wisdom by independent-minded mavericks, from Galileo Galilei to Charles Darwin. It can be difficult even for good scientists to distinguish between a revolutionary new insight and plain foolishness. Vested interests, governments, clergy, or private corporations, have long sought to control and manage the policy implications of scientific findings. Only in an environment of free debate can the best scientific facts and interpretations eventually win out. Even where new facts affecting the public welfare become well established, as occurred with the research into global warming around 2001, it does not follow from scientific logic what public policy response is the best one. In the case of climate change, the economic costs of full and rapid remediation would be high. Governance and economics are not hard sciences, despite the contrary aspirations of some of their theorists and practitioners. However, the environment in which ExxonMobil and the Bush administration devised parallel approaches to managing science and public policy in the age of oil spills and global warming was influenced by several factors that Darwin would not have recognized. One was the prominence of lawyers and the lawyers' win-for-the-client mindsets. The tobacco industry's near bankruptcy had demonstrated that not even talented lawyers could overcome terrible facts in a product liability matter. Yet that example had also shown how industry funding and purposeful, subtle campaigning could delay a legal reckoning for a dangerous product through the manipulation of public opinion, government policy, and scientific discourse. The scientific facts about oil pollution and climate change that ExxonMobil and its political and intellectual allies in Washington had to manage as the Bush administration took office were nowhere near as daunting as those that confronted the tobacco industry when the dangers of smoking were publicly recognized in the early 1960s. By comparison, the public health effects from the burning of fossil fuels were often indirect. The American economy's dependence upon oil and gas was not the product of some clever marketing campaign, as cigarette smoking arguably was, but was embedded in technological and industrial evolution. When regulators or lawsuits challenged ExxonMobil's liability on environmental matters, the corporation turned fiercely combative. Irving's internal protocols provided for rapid intervention by ExxonMobil's law department, which spent large sums on the most talented and aggressive outside litigation firms and did little to restrain their tactics. "They took a very hard line on the legal issues," explained a member of the corporation's board of directors. "It's very much a take-no-prisoners culture." From Washington to Houston to capitals worldwide, ExxonMobil executives internalized the corporation's attitude toward lawsuits of all kinds. "We will not settle just to avoid a struggle. If we believe we are in the right, we will use our superior resources to fight and appeal for as long as possible. And when the case is over, your house may no longer be standing. Think twice before you take us on." ExxonMobil's spokespeople and lobbyists regularly expressed dismay that the scientific findings they presented about the Valdez cleanup, climate, chemical regulation, and other public policy issues were not accepted by journalists, judges, and politicians as fully credible. David Page knew that the government scientists thought of him as a corporate shill, and he felt insulted by that accusation. "It's not about corporate America," he said. "To compare Exxon to a tobacco company is totally outrageous. They are two very different things. I will tell you, my livelihood was teaching students chemistry and biochemistry. I didn't need to work for Exxon or anybody else. If I thought for a minute that I was being asked to say something that wasn't true, or to hide information, or act in an indefensible way at all, I would have taken a hike and not had any further relationship. I don't hold my nose when I'm talking." Jeffrey Short ultimately quit his government job, in part because of the distractions caused by the corporation's unrelenting Freedom of Information Act requests. "We're all scientists. We didn't sign up to do that," he said. Mandy Lindeberg could think of only one positive aspect of her experience as an ExxonMobil adversary. Knowing that every field note she and her colleagues made would be scrutinized by corporate litigators and scientific consultants, she said, forced us to be very good scientists.